This is No More Silence, a podcast dedicated to bringing an end to youth violence in Toledo. This is a youth-led podcast bringing high school and university students together with community leaders and experts to learn about the complex causes of youth violence. Experts will discuss initiatives in the city, trauma-informed communities, opportunity networks, the courage required of nonviolence, and much more. The podcast will bring to light youth experiences that stay hidden to the general community. Adults and youth will also share poetry considering the impact of adultism, which is an adult bias against youth. No More Silence is the result of the Ram Empowerment Project and Fearless Writers, two local programs fostering youth-led activism and knowledge creation. Welcome to part one of What is Nonviolence? The questions posed to adult experts in this episode were designed by high school students as part of their work in two youth-led advocacy programs, Fearless Writers and Ram Empowerment Project. Today, we will be talking with Mark Kwiatkowski, who is the pastor for University Church. We will also be hearing from a youth-created poetry group at Rogers High School called Rhythm and Rhyme. This group will be answering questions and sharing short written pieces inspired by Six Principles of Nonviolence by Martin Luther King Jr. My name is Heather Cleary. I'm a faculty member of the social work program at the University of Toledo, and I'm one of the founding members of Fearless Writers and an adult member of Ram Empowerment Project.
My name is Mark Kwiatkowski. I grew up in Toledo. I went to Toledo Public Schools. I went to Start High School and graduated in 2011. And then I decided to go to seminary to become a pastor. Right now I'm the pastor of two churches in the area, the University Church and St. Paul's United Methodist Church. So what is my experience with nonviolence? So growing up, I grew up around a lot of violence. I've seen a lot of violence. Both in the schools and outside of the schools. Outside of school, I was involved in the Toledo hardcore punk scene, and there was a lot of violence there. It was really common for fights to break out at shows. We sort of had a gang mentality, so if one person, if somebody messed with one of us, you're messing with all of us, and we would take care of it, which meant usually putting you in the hospital. So after I got a little older, I got out of that scene. And it was probably good timing because after that, a lot of my friends ended up getting arrested for felonious assault and really changing the trajectory of their life. So when I was probably 18 or 19 is when I kind of stopped hanging around that. But it was after undergrad that I went to Boston University School of Theology, which is the alma mater of Dr. King, where he studied under Howard Thurman, and he wrote a lot about nonviolence. So that was where I really studied restorative justice, nonviolence, and learned about the legacy of Dr. King. While I was there, I also got the opportunity to intern at a place in Providence, Rhode Island called the Institute for the Study and Practice of Nonviolence. And the Institute was one of the first in its kind. There are now many organizations like that throughout the country that do really good work. But their main thing that they did there was they worked with gang members, both active and former gang members, to help end cycles of violence. So they had a 24-hour response team to any homicide in the Rhode Island area, and they would go to both the victims and the perpetrators of the violence in an attempt to stop retaliation from happening. And when they started this program, Providence was at like an all-time high of homicides, and they've seen it dramatically decrease since they've started this. And they respond to every homicide in Rhode Island. Now, Rhode Island's a pretty small state, so it makes it a little easier, I guess, but it was a really high murder rate there at the time. I think it's still pretty high, but it has helped a lot. And many of the people that work there are former gang members, formerly incarcerated people, and they work with the youth, and they work with community leaders, gang leaders. They work with the police when they have to. So that was where I really got my feet wet with learning about what it means to engage life with the principles of nonviolence. So what does it mean that nonviolence is a way of life? I think that something that Dr. King said is that nonviolence is not just physical violence, but also violence of the spirit. So how our attitude, how we respond to each other. Because most physical fights don't start off that way. It starts off verbal. And it may never become physical, but verbal violence and spiritual violence is violence just like anything else. So it's a way of life that is far more than just what we do physically, not getting into fights or not assaulting people. It has to do with how we interact with every person we come across and how we get to decide, do we want to make peace? Do we want to be reconciling towards each other, or do we want to continue the cycle of violence and harm? So nonviolence teaches us to always seek reconciliation, always seek peace, as far as it depends on us. And this includes interactions with friends, families, teachers, classmates, coworkers, and just society at large. So why does it take courage to be nonviolent? I think that being a cycle breaker is hard, because that's what violence is most of the time. It's an endless cycle of, especially gang violence. You see that a lot, where one person commits a homicide or some kind of violence, and then there's a response, which usually is more violence. And having to be the side that decides to say, enough, I'm not going to do this anymore, on the outside, you might look weak. And your other gang members or your friends might say, how can you stand there and just let them do that to you? You have to do something. You have to respond. But if nobody ever says, enough is enough, I'm going to break this cycle, then the violence will just, it'll just keep going. It'll never stop. It takes courage because it is not passive. It doesn't mean that you're just sitting there and doing nothing. We're still confronting violence. We're just not confronting it violently. We're confronting it with understanding and with reconciliation and a commitment to peace. And we also have to understand that even if we're committed to peace and nonviolence, the people that we're confronting, the people that we're working with, probably don't have the same commitment. So we might still have to face the threat of violence from the people that we're trying to talk to, which is hard when you're committed to nonviolence and they're not. It can be like a dangerous situation. But I love this quote from Morrissey from the Smiths. And there's a song where he says, it's so easy to laugh, it's so easy to hate, it takes guts to be gentle and kind. And I think it's really true, because a lot of people, this is can be a really ruthless world, and it doesn't take a lot to look around and see it. But it is harder to choose gentleness and kindness, because it doesn't come naturally to most people, at least not to me. If it does for you, then that's great, but it doesn't for me. Sometimes it's a discipline. It takes effort, and it takes time to learn how to do that, especially if that's not what you're used to. It takes you laying aside your ego to say, I don't care what people think of me. I don't care if they think less of me or think that I'm being a coward because I'm choosing not to engage in violence. It might look that way to some people, but that in reality, it's not.
My name is Trinity Gill. I am a sophomore at Rogers High School, and the principle I got assigned is Principle 1. Nonviolence is a way of life for courageous people. It is active, nonviolent resistance to evil. It is aggressive spiritually, mentally, and emotionally. My piece that I wrote is, the courageous strive to be better, fights for what is right. When having the mindset to continue to go in the right direction, you will continue to become the better version of yourself. When you are emotionally aware and available, you might recognize things you have never thought of.
In what ways can students in Toledo win friendship and understanding? So this is another one of Dr. King's principles of nonviolence, that nonviolence seeks to win friendship and understanding. I would say the most important thing is, don't make assumptions about people, and learn to listen to them and to truly see each other. Because if we look at people's actions and just look at the surface level, it's easy to make judgments and it's easy to hate them. It's easy to look at them and say, I don't understand why this person would act this way. They must just be a bad person. But if we can learn to look beyond the surface and learn to listen to each other and truly see each other and see each other's pain, we can begin to grow in empathy and love for each other and see that we're actually really similar at the end of the day. So in doing this, we can find common ground even in the midst of disagreement or differences. And I think focusing on the similarities and on the common ground is really powerful, because when you're walking alongside somebody and you find that you have some things in common and you actually can see their humanity, it becomes a lot harder to hate them. It becomes a lot harder to want to justify violence against them. So what is meant by Dr. MLK's beloved community? Dr. King said that the aftermath of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community. So the beloved community is the community in which nonviolence is the norm. It's the community in which nonviolence is the expectation of all the members. It's this idea that no relationship is disposable and that we're committed to peace and reconciliation with each other. And it's a really hard thing. It sounds great, but it's a really difficult thing to practice. And it's a vision. It's not necessarily something that we've necessarily even seen, but it was Dr. King's vision of the culmination of his movement would create this beloved community where people were committed to reconciliation and love and all these different principles that he preached.
My name is Kalima Cunningham. I am a senior at Rogers High School. I have Principle 2. Nonviolence seeks to win friendships and understanding. The result of nonviolence is redemption and reconciliation. The purpose of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community. Nonviolence reminds me of my easygoing, understanding friendships and community I have around me every day. My mother's love and wisdom, my friend's acceptance and understanding, my baby brother's laugh that touches everyone's hearts. Nonviolence reminds me of my beloved community that will be taken for granted if it is not acknowledged. I have gratitude for my community. Some people don't have such a thing to look forward to. A beloved community is an amazing thing to have and a wonderful thing to appreciate.
So one of Dr. King's principles of nonviolence says that nonviolence seeks to defeat injustice, not people. So what does that mean? It's the idea that no matter how awful somebody might seem or what their actions might seem, we have to understand that everybody is a part of a system. We're all a part of a system. And many people, not everybody, but most people are products of the environment and the families and the ideologies and the churches in which they were raised. And understanding that we're opposed to the ideas that are violent and that cause the violence, that the individuals that may be enacting these things are not necessarily our enemies. In fact, most of the time they're not. They're just victims of society as much as anybody else. So for example, somebody that is in a white supremacist cult, you can look at them and say, wow, they must be a bad person for believing that. And to be honest, I feel that way many times, but if we look a little deeper and look at that person's life and see that, look at their experiences. And this is not a justification for bad behavior or an excuse for it, but if we want to be progressive, we want to move forward, then we have to take this approach where we look at the humanity of the person, even the person that we disagree with, even the person that we feel is an oppressor. We have to look at them and try to figure out, how did they get this idea in their head that racism is an appropriate response to whatever situation they're facing? And look at that. And I think once we start to see their humanity, even in that, then we can move forward a lot better, because we understand that we're opposed not to this individual, but to the ideas that they were taught and that they were indoctrinated into or brainwashed into. So suffering is an unfortunate reality of life. We learn from suffering in what ways? Why is retaliation discouraged by nonviolence movements? For me, this is hard because suffering has always been the question of suffering, like why do we suffer and how can there be a good God when there's suffering in the world, or questions like that, always been really difficult for me. And I can't say that I really have the best answer, but I do know this. I want to make a distinction between what Dr. King called redemptive suffering and suffering. He said, he didn't say suffering is good. He said redemptive suffering can be transformative. So not all suffering is necessarily redemptive. And I think what makes it redemptive is our perspective on it, learning from it. Not necessarily that we're grateful for it. I mean, you hear some people talk about being grateful for their problems, and that's not always easy to do. But when we approach our suffering as though it's something that we can learn from, we can learn from it. And retaliation is discouraged because it creates an endless cycle. It creates an endless cycle of violence. And somebody has to stand up and say that they're not going to continue it, which is hard to do. But in terms of suffering, I don't believe everything happens for a reason. I don't believe that people suffer for some greater good. I believe that we can approach our suffering in a way that is more redemptive than it could have been had we not had that perspective. And that really does make a huge difference for us. And we can see how our suffering can benefit somebody else who might be going through the same thing, or maybe prevent somebody from going through the same thing based off our experience. And I think that's probably the most redemptive way to deal with suffering. But suffering is never a good thing. And it's never happens on purpose. It's never for any reason. It just happens.
My name is Shannon. I am a junior at Rogers High School. And the principle that inspired me for this poem, or words, whatever, nonviolence holds that suffering can educate and transform. Nonviolence accepts suffering without retaliation. Unearned suffering is redemptive and has tremendous educational and transforming possibilities. Okay, and then I wrote, I remember 2 years ago when I watched a young woman, my own neighbor, get shot and killed outside my bedroom window, her killer being the very girl she called her sister in another world. I learned that no one is really safe and that people can betray you. Hold your friends close, but your enemies closer. Because of this, I refuse to touch a gun, and that I am careful with my words and my actions.
Choosing love instead of hate can be challenging. How can people face this challenge successfully? And what are the benefits to choosing love instead of hate? Well, it's easy to talk about from a philosophical standpoint, but then when you actually have to do it, knowing a philosophy or theology behind it does not help at all, because it's really hard. It's extremely hard. But I would say that looking at the benefits, understanding the benefits, is a good motivation to want to do it. And the benefit is that not just that it helps create peace in society, but that it creates peace within yourself. There's a saying that an old mentor used to say to me. They said, unforgiveness is like keeping someone a prisoner, but after forgiving, you realize that the person that was the prisoner was yourself. And I find that to be really true, because when I'm filled with anger, somebody upsets me or says something or does something that really upsets me, the longer I sit there and stew about it and think about it, the worse my day becomes. And the worse whatever offense they did to me, the more impact that has on my life, because I'm sitting there thinking about it and letting it upset me. Now, there's a time and a place to be able to vent when we have issues that come up with people that hurt us or offend us. But at some point, we have to let it go and stop talking about it and move on. Even if they're not willing to reconcile, or even if it's not a safe person to reconcile with, the forgiveness helps the person who was hurt to move on and to not have to live with hatred and anger in their heart, because hatred is a heavy, heavy burden to bear. It is an all-consuming emotion that makes it really hard to really do anything else. And the more you are filled with hatred, the more you it just kind of spews out into every aspect of your life. And I think that most of us have probably met people that we can tell are just bitter and angry and hate and full of hate. And it's not really pleasant to be around them. And I know I was that person at one point, and I was not happy at that time. And I don't think I was probably very pleasant to be around for the most part. But there's also physical health benefits. I mean, holding on to anger and hatred is bad for your physical health. It can cause a lot of stress, which is bad for the heart. But the benefits of choosing to love instead of hate are peace and joy and love in your heart and living with that every day instead of the hatred and the anxiety and depression and being stuck on something that happened maybe even 10 years ago, moving forward and living in the present and trying to focus on how can I make my life the best it can be today. And I want to quickly say something about forgiveness, because a lot of people think about forgiveness and may not have the right understanding. My understanding of forgiveness is not saying, oh, it's okay. A lot of people think forgiveness is saying, like, oh, it was okay, don't worry about it. That's not forgiveness. Forgiveness is not making an excuse for someone's behavior. It's letting it go and not holding on to it. Whether you decide to be in a relationship with that person afterwards, that is a totally separate thing. There are times when you can forgive somebody and continue to have a friendship or relationship with that person. And there are times when you can't, and there are times when you shouldn't. So it's important to make that distinction that forgiveness is not giving permission for bad behavior. That is not forgiveness. So how do I keep the faith that justice will prevail? And I think this is a reference to the sixth principle, which says that the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice, which we just had a mural painted at St. Paul's that says that on it. But I would say what helps me to keep positive, to keep the faith that things are moving in a good direction, is to just get involved in the community, be involved in the good things, and look for the good things, because there's always bad things happening. And oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, the media sells fear, because fear gets clicks, fear gets views. And there's always bad things happening. There's tragic things happening every single day, but there's also good things happening every single day. A few weeks ago, I was sitting there by myself, kind of anxious about something and wondering like what was going to happen. And I had this revelation that was like, my whole life I've been asking the question, what if something bad happens? But I should be asking the question, what if something beautiful happens? Because beautiful things happen just as often as bad things happen, but we tend to focus on the bad things. So if we want to keep the faith and stay encouraged, let's look for the good things and pay attention. And if we're not seeing it, then we need to get involved in places where those good things are happening, because they are happening all the time. We just need to bring more attention to it. I can give an example real quick about that in my own work. There's a young man, I'm not going to use his name. 5 years ago, he was banned from St. Paul's. We had a free store. He was banned because he was a known domestic abuser. And his one of his victims was coming, and she didn't feel comfortable with him being there for obvious reasons. But today, he is coming again, and he is completely changed. His attitude is completely different, and I'm very encouraged. And he's become a really important part of the community. So a lot of people might look at somebody that, say, maybe does some kind of abuse, domestic abuse or whatever, and say that person is no good. They're just a bad person, and there's no hope of redemption for them because they hit a woman or whatever. And yes, that is a bad thing. It's a horrible thing, but it doesn't mean that there's no chance of redemption for that person. And I can see that in my work and my life all the time. And also, we have to look for the little things, because sometimes, a lot of times, changes don't happen in dramatic ways. A lot of times, it's incremental, small changes. But I think focusing on the good is important. And sometimes we have to go out of our way to look for the good and to learn to pay attention to it and to highlight it. When you see it in somebody else, bring it out. Talk about it. When you see it happening in the community, focus on it. Instead of going on social media and posting about all the bad stuff that's happening, what if instead we focused on all the good stuff that's happening? I think that our mental health would all be a lot better. We would be less anxious and depressed about the weight of the world, but we'd also be really encouraged to realize there are so many things happening even in our community in Toledo that we probably didn't even know about. Just today, I was at the coffee shop and this young man from Scott High School was selling candy. And I asked him, what are you selling this for? He said it's for an entrepreneurial and financial literacy program he's a part of. And I was almost moved to tears, because I was like, that's amazing that you're a young person doing something positive with your life when maybe some of your peers might be out there doing things that are not so positive. You're taking time out of your day to do something that's going to help you in your future and be a positive force in this world. So there's all kinds of good things like that. We just have to keep our eyes open.
We would like to thank WGTE and the producer of Voices Around Us, Chris Pfeiffer, for the opportunity to share our stories. Thank you to University Church, the high school writers of Rhythm and Rhyme, and the group's creator, Cheyenne Metz. This episode would not be possible without the support of Tina DeBord. In What is Nonviolence Part 2, we will hear from Chitrajan Greer Travis, a doctoral student at the University of Toledo in the philosophy of education, and more high school writers from Rhythm and Rhyme. To find out more and listen to other episodes, visit wgte.org/nomoresilence. I'm Heather Cleary, and you have been listening to No More Silence.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.